It's where you go to bike, hike, and stroll miles of pathways over more than 7,000 acres of parkland. A place to go explore rivers and fish their bountiful waters. Natural places to go marvel at magnificent wildlife while you play outdoors and go wander charming communities. Find all this and more at Destination Downriver. Give it a go.
Today's podcast is presented by MarketInsights.us. With the podcast on YouTube produced by the City of Taylor's Media Center. Thank you for the generous support of our community sponsor. When your destination is beyond downriver, let Martinson Family of Funeral Homes help you and your family. With locations in Trenton, Allen Park, Mabee, Rockwood, and Monroe, their staff is available 24/7 at 734-671-5400. For more information, visit martinson.com.
Thank you to our team sponsor, Allegra, Marketing, Print, and Design. Let Allegra assist you with your print, mail, design, and signs. Located in Wyandotte, Michigan, or call 734-284-5330.
Welcome to Destination Downriver. I'm your host, Carl Zimak. As industry changes from old methods and projects into clean new ways of powering our economy, Downriver is moving beyond its Rust Belt roots. From new sustainable developments to breakthrough and green zone projects throughout the region, there's a lot changing. We are going to look at some of that progress today through the eyes of our three panelists. John Dancy is the director of DPW in Sumter Township and the treasurer of the Alliance of Downriver Watersheds. The alliance of 22 public agencies work together to conduct water monitoring, publish reports and publications aiding in water quality and drainage improvements. Kevin Krause is the director of community safety and development for the city of Romulus. He's responsible for economic and community development, TIFA, DDA, community block grants, senior services, and more. And our last panelist is Scott Christie, president and partner of CMAC Transportation, a logistics company headquartered in Brownstown. 2 years ago, CMAC purchased and put in service Michigan's first electric semi-tractor trailer vehicle. We'll return with John, Kevin, and Scott in just one moment. Okay, we're back with our three panelists. From left to right across your screen, we have Kevin Krause, who dominates the airwaves when it comes to us. How many times is this for you, Kevin?
This is three.
This is three. See, you are the designated guinea pig for your city, the city of Romulus. In the middle, we have John Dancy, whose wife has been on.
There you go.
She is a popular figure on this program. And tell us about her foot. It's recovering?
It's fully recovered, yeah.
Fully recovered. So
yep,
she's out running around all over the place.
Everything but tennis. So.
And who wins the tennis?
I usually do. She gets frustrated.
Oh, okay. All right. I heard it. Oh, boy. That sounds like my wife. Scary. Scott Christie on our right. How are you today, Scott?
I'm doing great.
Okay, fantastic. We're going to, John, we're going to start with you.
Sure.
Okay. And water makes up so much of how we're defined downriver. And the ADW, the Downriver Watersheds, the Alliance for Downriver Watersheds, works on important initiatives, including publication and reports to help our region meet stormwater requirements, improve water quality throughout the region. Can you give us an overview of what some of these programs are and what their ultimate goals are?
Definitely. The ADW is an organization made up of right around 22 downriver communities that all pay into the ADW in order to monitor our stormwater, monitor our creeks, our rivers. I've been with them almost 3 years now, and I've been very pleasantly surprised with how many individuals work together to try to test our streams, try to test where illicit discharges might be coming from, where we might have issues upstream, and try to just locate them, find out how to solve any of the issues that might be causing some of them. Mm-hmm. And It is. It's an organization you don't see as much publicly on the side of the road or in television commercials or recruiting, but it's an organization that's very important for just as we continue to develop downriver, to just be able to monitor, make sure we're doing things properly, make sure businesses are aware of different initiatives of protecting our streams and rivers. And then the other big thing I liked about the ADW especially is they do a decent amount of public education programming. So they send out calendars twice a year that have a lot of different photo contests and information as to parks downriver, wildlife refuges, any type of green initiatives or walkways, or trying to find ways to just make downriver nicer to go to, nicer to work at, nicer to be in. And I've been very surprised. There's a lot of individuals both at private companies and engineering firms and member communities that just care a lot about our stormwater and how to just protect it and make it a good place to.
Do the individual cities do most of the testing, or is that done by outside contractor groups?
Outside contractors. Okay. There's a couple engineering firms, and then there's a few individuals that I believe might be paid out of the ADW or the Huron River Watershed Council, similar organizations, that put on waders and test streams and rivers pretty much all over downriver area. And then kind of GIS and geolocate those specific areas and say, okay, we've done a lot of testing. We're having specific contaminants in this area versus that area. What type of businesses might be causing some of those issues? And then from there, we can kind of put in our resources into trying to locate where we might have water chemistry issues. Because it makes a difference for both wildlife and theoretically any of that stormwater eventually gets turned into drinking water at some point that hopefully is healthy for all of us to drink.
Which is, which is always a huge concern. There's no doubt about that. Kevin, Romulus is one of the leaders in, with a range of community-based initiatives that are instigating kind of similar efforts, environmental and otherwise efforts across other downriver cities. Many of these are centered around embracing sustainable energy. Can you tell us how and why Romulus got so involved in solar and renewable energy projects?
Yeah, you know, Romulus sits in a, you know, kind of a geographic, unique position with us being the host of the international airport with DTW. We have I-94, 275. We have two major railroads that run through our city, multiple pipelines that run through our city. We're, you know, the city itself is pretty industrialized. And what we've heard as we've continued to develop and be able to benefit from all of those different industries that are coming to the city of Romulus, we've also seen this balance that we've had to start looking at as far as sustainability and green initiatives, because as we make those developments, we also want to make sure the citizens have opportunities to have balance in there. And we started with, you know, as the TIFA director, we started with our Romulus Athletic Center, and we looked at what we're doing over at that building. And, you know, it's a public facing building. It's a regional gem. If you've never been there, please, by all means, stop by and see the facility. It's a great facility for the region. And we looked at the solar at that facility, and we started with just the lighting in general. And we worked with DTE and one of our private contractors with Jack LED, and they came in and they switched over all of our lights within the facility to LED lighting. Significant impact. When you have a building that size and you switch over from your older incandescent lights to LED, ranging anywhere between $1,800 and $3,600 a month in our light bills change. So that's pretty significant, and that's less, you know, energy being used. And it's important for the region as you see areas like, you know, the coal plants and, you know, everything gets shut down along the riverfront and that ties into the water initiative, right? So that was the first part of it. Second part of it is we partnered with GEM Solar, and GEM Solar came in and they've they're working on developing a solar field for that facility itself, which will then again impact about another 40% of energy use on that building itself. So, you know, we've really started looking in that area. And, you know, going back to hosting the airport, because of the airport and all the other industrial development we have in the city, Romulus falls into a category that they consider underserved. And with the J40 initiative and the Justice 40 initiative that's kicking off, about 50% of Romulus falls into that initiative, which means that we're underserved when it comes to air quality, workforce development, you know, access to green recreational areas and stuff like that. So we have an opportunity here to capture funding that's going to be coming down from the federal government, through the state, through the county, through other, you know, non-governmental agencies, and really go after those monies, because 40%, that's where the J40 comes in, 40% of all those federal dollars have to be dedicated to underserved communities, and 50% of Romulus falls in that. So we have a great window of opportunity here to hopefully bring that balance back to our community from industrial and green space and recreation, and kind of create that balance.
Kevin, when it comes to, I know this wouldn't be your job, but you might know this anyway, surrounding communities, who else, does anyone else fall into that category?
So yeah, the J40 mm-hmm. initiative actually has, there's a GIS map online mm-hmm. that you can go, J40 map, GIS, mm-hmm. if you look that up, and you can click on every single census tract in every mm-hmm. community and identify the different areas, because it really is very area specific.
Okay.
And you can look at every city, the city you live in, the county, and see exactly where you fall in those initiatives.
Wow. Interesting. A lot of work.
Yeah.
when did you guys actually start these type of initiatives? How long
it's been it? About 2 years, you know, okay. under mm-hmm. the new mayor, Mayor mm-hmm. We started under Mayor Burcroft, and we've continued on with Mayor McCrate, and mm-hmm. have just become more and more active gotcha. in that realm. And, you know, to John's projects, mm-hmm. we're working with DCC now and discussing some very, very initial, projects in the Romulus area. But, you know, Romulus is kind of higher elevation. We're more mm-hmm. in Western Wayne County. Mm-hmm. So when it rains, we see the water, but all the water that we have the day it rains moves all downriver through the e-course tributaries and mm-hmm. streams and everything else. And, mm-hmm. Kind of makes its way eastward towards the river. So we don't see a lot of the flooding issues and some of the other issues with stormwater mm-hmm. and retention and stuff, but we sit in a unique situation where we might be able to capture mm-hmm. some of that initial stormwater and then slowly release it to prevent flooding from other communities to our east.
Which would be fabulous for yeah. communities further downriver. There's
Correct.
No doubt about that, whether it's Taylor, and we don't have the type of flooding problems that some others do, but Dearborn Heights, on the other hand,
absolutely
real problems every yeah. year, forever.
Yeah.
Scott Christie,
yes, sir.
From CMAQ, welcome.
Thank you. It's
great to have you here. Okay, public sector now. Okay,
yeah.
Private sector now.
Yeah.
How does a transportation and logistics company find its way into electrical vehicle development? You guys, big announcement not that long ago, getting full fledged into some of these initiatives. What were you thinking and why?
Well, I think having great partners, you know, we partner with two of the premier truck manufacturers, mm-hmm. with Kenworth and Freightliner. Mm-hmm. Being that we're a local regional truckload provider, mm-hmm. We have, with the electric product, we have a little bit of an advantage over the rest of the, I guess, industry mm-hmm. when it comes to that technology and that technology being applied and working. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how it all started. Our customer, Kenworth, came to us and mm-hmm. said, hey, you are a local, it makes sense for you guys, you're a regional type carrier. At that time, the truck was projected to get, you know, anywhere between 2 and 250 miles on it. And so
okay.
it really hits home with that, because that's my average length of haul, is around 250 to 275 miles.
Okay.
All my trucks go out and then they return home every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a perfect application on paper for electric. And so that's kind of how the opportunity opened its door.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we had a couple delays with COVID and a few things that put us back, the production of the vehicle. It's very, very technical. So a lot of the components, the main piece of the truck is like a normal truck, but the interior mm-hmm. of it, as far as the engine side of it, mm-hmm. Is all electronic, and it's mm-hmm. it's all very high education engineers that developed all this.
Mm-hmm.
So it really took some time to work out the kinks, and there's still kinks, don't get me wrong, but mm-hmm. it made sense for us just to look at it, just because of our length of haul and kind of where we sit and what we do for our mm-hmm. for our customers.
Now, are your partners, are they coming in on the maintenance and support end on a constant basis, or is it just left up to you people, to your own people, to kind of figure it out?
No, Kenworth has done a great job of partnering with us
mm-hmm.
to figure this
mm-hmm.
out. These trucks are not, you need a couple people working on them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be in a very
safe environment. Suit wearing, the volts that these trucks put out, they're very dangerous. So you can't just have a normal mechanic, mm-hmm. a diesel mechanic, work on these. Mm-hmm. So we went through extensive training with Kenworth that they provided. We are also doing our own training with our own team, and just making sure that when we, a lot of the things that we're experiencing are for the first time, right? Mm-hmm. And so even from towing the vehicle on mm-hmm. on a maintenance issue, there's a process that needs to take place to be able to do that, because you can't roll these forward, you can't pull them, you can't push them. Mm-hmm. You have to be very strategic with how you handle this truck, mm-hmm. Especially for the value of it. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, you have to continuously train, and our provider helped with some of that training, and then we're doing some of that on our own.
Do you consider this a success from how you're viewing it? Is this a successful partnership? Are you really happy with it? Are you happy with where this is going?
I'm happy with the partnership with our provider. I'm not happy with the application has mm-hmm. changed a lot. So the 250 miles went to like 150 to 175 miles when we took delivery.
Okay.
There are some updates mm-hmm. and there are some things that are still being worked out. So mm-hmm. I think some of the newer electric vehicles that are coming out, they know more than what they did when they built this one.
Okay.
And we're still feeling some of the pain of the initial build. Mm-hmm. There is a huge update we're waiting for that mm-hmm. is causing a few issues with the truck, you know, shutting off during, not while it's driving, but when you're stopped or whatever, it will show a fault code. Mm-hmm. You got to completely power it down mm-hmm. and then repower it back up when you shouldn't really have to do that. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of waiting for a modification mm-hmm. and an engineer to write the code for that and get that mm-hmm. installed. But so yeah, the provider, our team, Brownstown, mm-hmm. the community, everybody's been great with that mm-hmm. piece of it. Mm-hmm. I'm just a little I'm a little disappointed with the actual way the truck works. Okay. from the just the miles consumption of it mm-hmm. and a lot of the unknown that we're experiencing. I would have thought would have been worked out a little bit more, being that it's such a mm-hmm. It's a big thing for industry, right? It's huge, the mm-hmm. electric vehicle mm-hmm. being what it was. So I thought that there should have probably been a little bit more time. It was already slow road to us anyway.
Right.
Taking a few more months or even 6 months to mm-hmm. work out some of these kinks, I think would have been beneficial for us being a small company. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's a success. I think anytime you're you know, part of the beginning of something, that always means something. And yeah, there is a cost to it. Mm-hmm. But I think that the you don't know what you don't know. And I think when you want to be the best in my drive every day to my team, and my push is to be the industry leader. My dad has built a great legacy for us that we have to mm-hmm. continue on. Mm-hmm. So we want to be that pioneer. So being able to chase some of this stuff is great. Right. But I do think that we're still a long way away from mm-hmm. being able to 100% go electric at any sector of our economy. From commercial vehicle to passenger vehicle, you're seeing some of that with the pullback now. Mm-hmm. It's very expensive mm-hmm. to be able to put this stuff together. It's mm-hmm. very highly technical, and again, it's very, very expensive. So I think it has to be the right application for all mm-hmm. All parties. Mm-hmm. And right now, that window to make all parties happy is a little smaller than it should be, I think. So
Understood. Mm-hmm. You've obviously heard and seen the same type of reaction that you get from many people in public who say, you know, it's too expensive. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the range that I want. And like you're saying, is it too early? Is it too rushed? You know, how do we make it all? What would you say to people just out there considering an electric vehicle on their own? Not a sure. Kenworth, you know, but
sure.
What would you say to them?
What I would say is I think for every situation, for your individual situation, mm-hmm. You just have to take that in consideration. If you're somebody that maybe doesn't drive much or doesn't do the family trip up north, mm-hmm. And you're local and you're going to stay in this area and you're going to run and you can you know, you go to and from your home base and mm-hmm. you can charge it and do the things necessary. They're great vehicles. They're very powerful. I think our electric truck it might be the nicest truck we have in our fleet.
Really?
As far as the interior, the way it's built. Mm-hmm. So they're beautiful. They're great. Mm-hmm. I just think they're very specific to what your situation is. Okay. And for myself and for C-Mac, we have our own charger, and it's great because our trucks do go out and come back. So that's a huge advantage for us, and that's why we did it. But it would be nice to have one a little bit more of a drive time with it. And it would also be nice if I could charge it somewhere else than having to bring it back to Brownstown every time, because things happen. Traffic, whatever, wait time at suppliers getting unloaded. It'd be nice to be able to plug in and keep that thing going throughout the day instead of having to bring it back, because that is a cost, and that is something that our customers don't anticipate when we put a rate together for them.
I hear you. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Kevin, let's go back to you for a second. Your Tesla supercharging area is something car manufacturers have been hoping to achieve in the spurring electronic vehicle sales, that type of thing. How did Romulus find itself as a site for this vehicle supercharging station development?
Yeah, so I'll go back to, you know, kind of how I started the conversation, just mm-hmm. Geographic advantage, right?
Okay.
Yeah, Romulus is located right in the middle between, you know, our blue-collar workforce of Detroit mm-hmm. and kind of our think tank of Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. We're smack dab in the middle of that. MDOT is working on this EV lane that connects the two. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had a great development that was happening right at Vining Road in I-94, right? Mm-hmm. And that North Point development is bringing basically 2 million square feet of light industrial, light manufacturing, mm-hmm. Speculative build outs in that area. We already mm-hmm. have some key names coming in. SIVA is taking up one of the entire buildings, you know,
really?
Piggybacking into the battery and the EV mm-hmm. With what C-Mac is looking at and doing. You know, they are one of the tier one suppliers to, you know, the kind of pedestrian auto EV market and mm-hmm. For Ford. So we have that space there, and we're continuing to develop it. So being right along that corridor of I-94, you know, 164,000 come through that area on a daily basis. And we have the opportunity to kind of put a mega charging station in there. There'll be about 40 sites. These are like kind of tier three chargers, mm-hmm. 20-30 minute range, and individuals be able to get right off I-94, pull in there. We have a Sheetz gas station, first one to the state of Michigan,
yes.
that just announced. They broke ground a couple weeks ago, and if you've been by that area, it's going up quick. So it's going to be open before we know it, but they'll be able to pull in, charge their vehicle, go next door, get something to eat while they're waiting, and come back to their vehicle and be back on the road.
And I understand that Sheetz food is good.
Yeah. I've had the privilege of stopping on a trip out east and through Pennsylvania. I've been able to stop there and look at their product and their facilities. And yeah, we're excited to have them in Romulus.
When you're talking about your new development, any job projections out there as far as numbers go?
Yeah, so the entire area, when it was first put together, we're looking at approximately 2,500 jobs altogether, right? Mm-hmm. 2.2 million square feet, it's a lot of space.
Right.
North Point's doing a great job. They have RFPs out right now for mm-hmm. the other buildings and mm-hmm. have just submitted plans for the rest of the development. So three of the six buildings are up, and they're going to be breaking ground on the other ones. And with that brings a commercial frontage for the mm-hmm. you know, citizens of Romulus. Not only is it jobs, but you know, you have to have a place for those individuals that are coming to work in Romulus to go eat lunch and grab coffee on the way mm-hmm. into work, and stop and grab something after they get off work or whatever it is. So that frontage along Wick Road starts with Sheetz, is going to that mega charging station right next door, and then we're going to continue to work on retail development along Wick Road.
And that's fantastic news for any community downriver.
Absolutely.
You know, it's kind of all for one and one for all. If you're able to lure that, maybe somebody else is able to lure something else, and you start looking at that, and you just keep building the region.
We're really, and you just, you know, you said the magic word, region, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have really kind of shied away from the boundaries of Romulus anymore. You know, mm-hmm. we as humans put those boundaries on the maps.
Mm-hmm.
But when we look at development, when we look at job growth, when we look at you know, places for people to live, it really isn't about those boundaries anymore. Mm-hmm. A win for Romulus is a win for Van Buren or Wayne or
sure.
Westland or Taylor
sure.
or you know, whoever, because we know that if there's 500 jobs in a new factory, a new manufacturer, that not all 500 of those individuals are going to live in Romulus.
Yeah.
They're going to live in the surrounding cities, and vice versa. If it's mm-hmm. you know, if it's a new new manufacturer that comes to Van Buren, we know that it's a win for us as well. So we've really shifted that gear, and we're looking at that kind of regional impact of economic development. I did a business-to-business earlier this year, and that's what it was all about, is the regional economic development impact on Wayne County and how we can create these areas to live, work, and play. Which ties into the bigger corridor, right? So you have 94 corridor between Detroit and Ann Arbor, but as you're coming across 94, when you hit Inkster Road, you have E-Course exit. And that E-Course exit from 94, you can get off at E-Course and you can kind of go straight across over to 275. It's a connector. And that is kind of that industrial corridor connector of Wayne County in that area. So. The city of Romulus, Taylor, Van Buren have all partnered together with Airtropolis, and we've created an LDFA. It's at the state level for approval right now. We're, keeping our fingers crossed that everything goes well with the budget coming up and we're able to capitalize on this. But this LDFA that's coming across there will look at, revitalizing and improving E-Course Road through that corridor from I-94 all the way to 275. So it's a bottleneck challenge for Romulus, goes down to two lanes, makes it very difficult for the industrial growth that, that we're seeing in the area and just the intermodal logistics that is around the airport. And that LDFA will, widen E-Course Road to three lanes. It'll improve all the facilities at all your major intersections. So, Inkster kind of just got done, but we're looking at Middle Belt, Merriman, Wayne Road, Vining, all the way across Hannon, Cogswell. And we'll really assist with that growth in that area. But we also are going to be engaging in a planning session where we look at how can we get creative with residents, right? With residential growth that goes hand in hand. Because there's this, right now there's this clear demarcation line between if there's residential area, we don't want industrial next door. But if you look at models that are out west, they found creative ways through design to make that work where people can live close to where they work and still not have the impacts of that, right? Through tiering, and that might be multi-use along the road frontage. And then you layer it back into an area where you have this maybe multifamily or brownstone type development. And then as you go further back, single family residential. So we're gonna be embarking on this planning kind of expedition on what E-Course Road looks like. How can we commingle that residential and industrial growth so there's sustainability and there's a balance between the two and really create that community where you can live, work, and play.
Wow, that lot of moving parts there, Kevin.
Yeah.
No doubt about that, but all for the good.
Yeah, it's going to be a long, we need involvement. We need people involved. It's going to be, this is 5, 7, 10 years out, but you start the planning now so you can start executing that strategic plan for the long term.
John, let's go back to the ADW for a minute. You guys help manage and support a variety of drainage projects, and that's always of interest to anything from the private sector to basic residential development and things like that. Green roofs, rain gardens, green infrastructure trends. Can you tell us about some of those that are making a difference in this area?
Yeah, the ADW gets a decent amount of funding from the state level through a couple different grants and management programs. And it's one of those things that it's a lot of times it's out of sight, out of mind. It's very hard to grasp how you capture rainfall in an area. If it used to be agriculture or wildlife area and now it's developed, industrial buildings, residential buildings, it's kind of hard to grasp the fact that when you take that land area away, all that rainwater really does, it falls onto the ground, onto these buildings, into gutters, into catch basins, into pipes underground that lead to flooding downstream. And it's hard to kind of grasp that as individuals or even as businesses. All right, I want to develop a building. I want to do something beneficial for this particular area or community. The ADW sets up a lot of different programs that businesses or residents can utilize to just be aware that capturing rainwater in an area is important, because there's nothing more frustrating as an individual living in a home or a business owner and you got flooding problems, right? I mean, the big storm comes through or a snowstorm in the winter and then it all melts and you got flooding problems in your parking lot, in your basement, in an area of your business. And the ADW spends a lot of time just through virtual meetings, discussing with engineering firms, consultants, and municipalities to say, how do we capture this in specific areas? So that the furthest downriver communities don't get the short end of the stick and they get more flooding issues, mm-hmm. where residents get affected, backups in people's basements. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants that. Or parks that you can't go and visit because they're completely underwater. Roads that are overfilled with water just due to ditch issues. So it's the same thing. I mean, it starts with like a seed of how do you plan some of these programs? How do you actually enforce them? And even if you're 5, 10, 15 years from feeling like you're going to be fully completed in an area, the ADW just spend a lot of their resources and their funding that comes in from member communities in the state level mm-hmm. to say, how do you educate the public on the fact that capturing rainwater is a very beneficial thing? Mm-hmm. It's hard to do. And then how do you provide an economic value to it? Because as a business owner or a homeowner, mm-hmm. you don't want to feel like you're spending government funds and money and not getting anything in return. Mm-hmm. You want to feel like, okay, if we're going to capture rainwater in specific areas, mm-hmm. how's that benefiting both my little area or neighborhood or businesses? And how's it benefiting individuals in other communities downstream? Because mm-hmm. you need that funding to come into an organization that the ADW, which I was a little more unaware of when I started with mm-hmm. the ADW 3 years ago, mm-hmm. they do a lot of behind the scene work of mapping and GISing all of our stormwater infrastructure. Because mm-hmm. it's pipes underground. I mean, you don't really, on a daily basis of driving roads and around the area and going to all these different businesses, restaurants, mm-hmm. events, there's a whole network of underground infrastructure mm-hmm. that's supplying water, taking sanitary sewage and stormwater away. Mm-hmm. So that ADW's primary focus is, all right, how do we manage stormwater? Mm-hmm. We get big, severe storms and flooding. How do we manage that and try to find a way to capture it further upstream mm-hmm. and then allow it to kind of release into the region slower mm-hmm. so you just don't have the frustrating... We want to prevent those events from happening in the mm-hmm. future, mm-hmm. whether it be at Dearborn Heights or some of the other downriver communities mm-hmm. that... They called in a lot of our local municipalities as an emergency response, and I remember spending a whole 4th of July weekend with 15 other communities that all went to Dearborn.
Yeah.
And it impacts people's lives. I mean, when you go drive down a street and you see every basement was flooded and here's everybody's belongings out on the side of the road.
Right.
It kind of makes an impact on you when you got to take it to a landfill. Mm-hmm. Okay, how do we manage that in the future to hopefully prevent that? And the only way to do that is through ADW initiatives that say, all right, let's at least work with businesses mm-hmm. to make it cost effective for a business to put in some of these rain capturing mm-hmm. infrastructure.
And it's kind of out of sight, out of mind, yeah. the work that you guys are doing, which, you know, and there's impact every time you turn around. And I'll use the Wick Road and Vining mm-hmm. development, mm-hmm. that North Point development. We have a unique situation over there. When it rains, there's part of Wick Road that floods out. Yeah. And you've seen it before, you know, from being from Romulus. But there's some unique stuff over there where there's elevation differences. So there's the Wick Road area, and that drains and has to cross I-94 and then get lifted up like almost 30 feet over Merriman Road into the other side. So yeah. there's some unique, you know, like you got to lift all that water and move it mm-hmm. through a pump system up and over a road to get to the other side. And mm-hmm. it's all out of sight because as you're driving, you don't see any of it. You right. just see some water or a pond mm-hmm. or a little bit of water pooling. But that water backing up over the road, when a developer comes to the area, they look and they go, I don't want to build there because if I build there, right. the front of my store is going to flood.
Right.
So the work they're doing, the precursor work, mm-hmm. will, you know, hopefully alleviate that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Makes my job easier to mm-hmm. develop an area when mm-hmm. we have good infrastructure in place.
Both of you are public employees. Realistically, do we spend enough tax dollars in this area? I mean, it seems like, especially from a news management situation, which I do, it seems like we're having a 100-year rain every 5 years.
Yeah.
And we're getting that type yeah. of Dearborn activity. If it's not there, it's in Dearborn Heights. It's been in Wyandotte. It's been in Gibraltar. Of course, they're way downriver. But it's pretty obvious that some of these things are changing from a climate perspective, whatever, okay?
Yeah.
Do we really just have to grit our teeth and spend more money on infrastructure?
I think it goes back to the out of sight, out of mind, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's something that's there. We know it's there. Mm-hmm. If it's functioning and we're only dealing with it once in a while, mm-hmm. then it's not as impactful as it is to somebody driving their car every day mm-hmm. on a road that's deteriorated, right? But when you do have an issue with it, mm-hmm. it's a significant issue.
Right.
And like John said, like to go through a community, and we've seen it before, and mm-hmm. you know, you have thousands of individuals, families whose memories and whose belongings are on the curb that mm-hmm. are going to a landfill, and just the landfill issue right. that we're creating as well, you know, as far as sustainability goes, is a whole nother, you know, yeah. rabbit hole you can go down. But, you know, it's tough. I think that you got to find the balance. I think municipal government tries to do that. But, mm-hmm. You know, there's just so many different systems that mm-hmm. have been created over the years mm-hmm. and are tiered. And, mm-hmm. you know, trying to make the best and maximize all of them is definitely a challenge mm-hmm. for municipal government, mm-hmm. whether the answer to that is more money or better collaboration or regionalization. I don't know.
Yeah, my perspective is that we don't, there's money out there as a taxpayer public money at the state level, at the federal level. It's just, it's difficult for local governments and ADW organizations to get that money to funnel down far enough to get it to contractors that can make some improvements or to get it to engineering firms or consultants that can plan a project. It takes time. I mean, you can't have it happen overnight because you need oversight of it. Mm-hmm. But they're definitely, it's expensive working with underground infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about how much it costs to redo roads, you just exponentially increase that when you go from working at grade level to 10, 12, 15 feet down.
Yeah.
So I think there's enough money out there. It's just difficult to access, I think, at the local and regional level to mm-hmm. say, these are projects we got to plan, engineer, complete to try to just alleviate flooding in an area. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's just one of the goals, the ADW, just through talking with individuals at local governments mm-hmm. and different organizations that focus primarily on stormwater. Mm-hmm. How do you get some of that money into the system in such a way that we can kind of complete projects that would alleviate some of these? Because a lot of times when you're driving in an area or a region, hey, these ditches are full to the top and there's water over this road. I'm going to drive the other way, make it out of sight, out of mind. But the ADW and government is kind of designed to say, okay, how do we actually address this issue to prevent it from happening over and over and over again?
And I think the education, mm-hmm. though, helps too, because mm-hmm. as a business owner that has built buildings mm-hmm. and I'm building more, we dedicate a lot of our land to, you know, water retention.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, you guys say, you know, out of sight, out of mind. I see it every day when I pull in the back of my facility, and I got this big hole back there for water retention. Two mm-hmm. of them, actually, two ponds that we had to put in to manage some of the water. You know, mm-hmm. and we have a Van Cliff drain that runs through our property, so we got to manage that a little bit. But these guys are right. I think with the education and letting some of us business owners, because again, when we first found out about it, I'll be honest with you, we never built a building before, especially to the size. And when you lose an acre and a half of land mm-hmm. On a 23-acre project mm-hmm. To water retention, you're like, really? Are we going to get that much water ever? You know, and some people do, obviously. Mm-hmm. Some people don't. My point mm-hmm. being is that we're like, wow, that seems like an awful lot. And you see all of these different retentions as you look at these business developments. Mm-hmm. And but again, that's just for that site and for that area. That doesn't take in consideration. So, you know, again, the more education, I think, to everybody, the better off we are. And especially to the business owner, because, again, you do get a little bit of a eye-opening experience when you plan out how much acreage you got to chuck out just to basically manage the water in the area. So
at the end of the day, again, from my private sector perspective, mm-hmm. How difficult is it to balance your financial sheet against some of the things you're just mentioning? You know, I'm required to do this, mm-hmm. but geez, that pond never fills up.
Sure.
You know, it's empty, but I'm required. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like invasive species, the same thing.
Yeah.
It's a challenge. I mean, obviously mm-hmm. it's a challenge. There's really not much you can do about it. I think you just kind of build that into your cost model, and mm-hmm. it's kind of part of the doing business piece, you know? But I think it's, again, as you develop bigger properties, there's more and more land that needs to be pushed towards the water retention. And I mm-hmm. think that just that piece of education, you know, getting that out there in front, I think it it's not going to help the business owner at the end of the day because you still got to pay for it. You're still going to feel like you lost some space there. But at the end of the day, it's necessary. And if it's necessary for the area, then you know you got to kind of be a good neighbor and do what's right. So
from a lot of the initiatives that CMAQ is taking, do you see others in the industry following your lead?
We hope so. Okay. I think some of that is our competitive advantage too. Mm-hmm. So I hope it's a copycat. I think our world's a copycat world. Those that are doing it well, everybody's trying to figure out how they're doing it. I think we hope that we're changing some things and changing some people's opinions on how you look at things. But we also hope that they don't do it too rapidly, so we don't lose some of our market share. But I think that you mentioned the SIVAs and you mentioned some of these large companies. SIVA is one of my customers, and even though they're a competitor, they're also a customer. And in our business, as you talk about the municipalities working together, the same thing's happening in our industry as well. We're all kind of comparing notes. We're all building buildings. We're all kind of keeping an eye on, hey, water retention, water management, mm-hmm. Cost, infrastructure, concrete versus asphalt, everything. What type of fire suppression do you put in and all that? So especially with some of the electric vehicles and the batteries, you needing the right fire suppression to deal with some of those problems that, again, are unknown. We don't know what's going to happen. We just know they're going to happen. And we all have to be ready to be able to mitigate that. So, I think it's obviously a challenge because you want people to follow. You want people to take your lead. But you also too want to be the leader, and you want to be the industry leader in driving some of that. So yeah, I think it's a balance, but we hope they're doing the right things, right? I mean, right. I think that a lot of us, again, it's easy to look the other way to make a dollar. Mm-hmm. And I think that that catches up to you long term. I think if you address it up front, you're educated, you know some of those boundaries are or those hurdles are going to be there. You address it up front, you work with your partners and your municipalities you work with, and mm-hmm. and you get through it, and together you prosper, right?
Yeah. I think that's a fantastic place to sum it up. Scott Christie, John Dancy, Kevin Krause, thank you very much for coming in. Great discussion.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
All righty.
Yeah, thank you.
That was a great discussion. It's not easy to transform our environment. It's never one issue that makes a difference. Many issues drive the blight to bright transition. Thanks to our guests, John Dancy, Kevin Krause, and Scott Christie for attending, along with the work of Samantha Rickert and Joe Camilleri behind the scenes. For Destination Downriver, I'm Carl Zimak signing off. Until next month, we'll see you then.
Thank you again to our sponsors, Martinson Family of Funeral Homes and Allegra Marketing, with a special thanks to our production partners here at the new Taylor Media Center. Thanks for listening and watching. Please visit our website, destinationdownriver.com, or our Facebook page, and be sure to join us for next month's podcast.